Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
You know what? Also do a tutorial on your thing about refried beans. I'm not Mexican. I'm Puerto Rican. I don't do refried. I mean, I can, but I don't do refried beans.
I was like being low-key racist right there.
Just a little bit. I'm actually offended. That's it. You are officially canceled.
Whatever. People have been telling me I'm racist forever.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, and welcome to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Miss Sadie. I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
What do we have today? So we're going to talk about what it feels like everybody's talking about right now. And it is the question of whether or not Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson, in their new up-and-coming book, Original Sin, have uncovered the cover-up that was Biden's decline.
Oh, brother.
Did you
they didn't uncover anything. They knew about it all along.
Okay, hold it. It is true, though, because I was collecting stuff for these. I'm like, I have so many thoughts on this. I'm so annoyed by this, especially after some things that I've heard. Because obviously they've put out excerpts and everything like that. We'll talk about it. Okay, what else are we going to talk about today? We're going to see if we get a chance. We're going to give you a recap, a little update on what Trump has been doing in the Middle East while he has visited Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and I think now he's on his way to the UAE today.
Yes, he actually is in Qatar right now speaking to the troops. He just wrapped that up, and he is going to be boarding a plane ASAP. He's supposed to land. Well, he was supposed to be done with his speech at 6 a.m., but it's Trump. So
yeah, it's a little over.
Yeah, he'll be a little late.
And I would say that this trip, I would summarize it in money. There's been a lot of money going around on this trip, and some people have thoughts about that, but we want to give you an update on what is going on over there, some of the highlights, and our thoughts on his visit. So you ready to get into this? Let's talk. You want to talk about our friend Tapper?
I mean, I guess. Yes. I'm buying his book.
It's
so, I mean, we want to actually talk about it. I'm actually curious about the book, even though people are saying that there's nothing new or exciting in it, but I'm excited to read it. I think the funny part is, like, people are in my DMs mad that I'm giving this guy money.
Yeah, I got the same thing.
And I think that's silly because, first of all, like, we all are.
You guys, I subscribe to the Washington Post and the New York Times.
Yeah, I'm doing this because I like to be informed about all the different angles of different stories. So I mean, come on. And I get it. Lots of people are like, I'm not going to support that, but you do you. I'll wait until it gets out of the library. And so really people do want to read it. They just think that by giving that $20, it's going to somehow like.
Well, it's giving Tapper money to Tapper. Yeah.
But honestly, like I put in the post, anything he gains monetarily, it can't make up for the trust that's totally been obliterated.
No.
People don't trust him anymore. Even I don't think his own colleagues, every single person has to know and is watching all the clips, because people are going back in the archives, listening to him totally defend the president and act this isn't happening.
Well, he's trying really hard to make it not the case.
My $20, your $20, whatever. Yeah. So maybe he'll get to finance a new house or something, but nobody trusts him anymore. So I don't feel like it's...
And I, from what I'm hearing about this book, I don't think this is necessarily going to help his case. So let me give you guys a little bit of what, in case you're not up to speed, Jake Tapper, CNN anchor, very well known, and Alex Thompson, who is with Axios. Now, Alex Thompson, to his credit, was calling out the issues with Biden. He was reporting on them. He was trying to bring them to light, and he got a lot of pushback, not just from the Biden White House, but also from fellow Democrats who were upset of, like, why are you talking about this? Like, why? And I don't know if necessarily it was like, why are you talking about this? Or they honestly believed that wasn't true, which I don't believe that's the case.
None of them believe that.
But what I'm disappointed in is that Alex Thompson is not a well-known name, not like Jake Tapper. So if you are looking to sell this book to the masses, it is, of course, beneficial for you to have a well-known individual attached to the book. And so Jake Tapper steps in. But unfortunately, I think that kind of undermines Alex Thompson's work because he has attached himself to Jake Tapper for this book.
Well, and that's now, my question is, like, Alex Thompson isn't an idiot and he works in media. He's a journalist. He knew Jake Tapper's stance. He watched. Why would he? Is it just because of all the CNN reporters, of all the reporters in legacy media, is he the most trustworthy, or he's been around the longest? So he's too big to fail, because, or did they just not do their due diligence and roll back the tape and actually listen to Jake Tapper repeatedly tell people, no, stop questioning the president? So I want to understand why Alex Thompson would pick him.
Well, I mean, I have a theory on that. I don't have any inside knowledge per se, but, you know, this book is supposed to, it's coming out on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. It's called Original Sin, the subtitle to this book. It's Original Sin, President Biden's Decline, Its Cover-Up, and His Disastrous Choice to Run Again. That's okay. The full title. Okay. And so it's basically supposed to be covering Biden's cognitive and physical decline and how it was hidden by his aides from the American public, from the media, before he was fully exposed on the infamous June 2024 debate disaster, which we are very close to a year. It's been a year almost.
We should have a party.
I know, which is crazy. So now, of course, with every book, especially when you have a big name like Jake Tapper behind it, there's promo, and currently the promo of the last few days excerpts have been released to The New Yorker.
But it was also an Axios exclusive.
So there was The New Yorker. So The New Yorker focused in on primarily the big story there was the infamous LA fundraiser. Do you guys remember all this? It was with Biden, Barack Obama, Julia Roberts, and George Clooney were hosting. It was at the Peacock Theater in L.A. So that was the focal point on the New Yorker article. And then the focus with the Axios article, which was written by Alex Thompson, because he's with Axios, and it was like exclusive. Okay, whatever. Obviously, it's an exclusive. You're with Axios, but okay.
Is he going to give the exclusive to another paper? No.
Yeah, I'm just like, okay, whatever. So anyways, his big story was that there was discussions that because of Biden suffering from spinal deterioration, I said that correctly, right?
Yes, you did. Very good.
I'm very proud of myself. There were considerations that he would need a wheelchair, but they acknowledged that they couldn't put him in a wheelchair during the election because that would be bad optics. And they would have to consider doing it, though, for his second term. And like, how would they manage and maneuver that? Which to me is crazy. Then also The Guardian put out a few things too, because they got an early copy of the book. So that is also probably worth a read if you guys want to check it out. I'll have links to all three of these articles in the show notes if you guys want to go into them deeper. But the big revelation from the New Yorker article, which by the way, okay, so yesterday, this is a little side anecdote. I'm researching all this, right? And I come across a video of Jake Tapper where he is anchoring his show. I'm pretty sure it was his show. And he's saying the New Yorker reveals when he puts in the decline. I'm like, the New Yorker, you wrote the article, dude. The New Yorker is publishing the excerpt from your book. Why are you reporting it?
That's weird.
Like, they have some kind of exclusive and they uncovered something. Like, the New Yorker reveals? It was so bizarre to me. And I was like yelling at the screen because I was towards the tail end of me researching this outline. And I'm like, you wrote it. You're the one.
That's so bizarre, though. Do they really think that nobody catches on to these things?
I was like, wait, what are you talking about?
So
the New Yorker revealed. Anyways, it was just, I had a moment, okay? Because, so George Clooney was hosting this, the fundraiser in LA at the Peacock Theater, correct? And the big revelation in the New Yorker article is that George Clooney was taken aback of how, not only how bad of shape he was in, but reportedly Biden did not recognize him when they were introduced. And they
which is crazy. I mean, he's hosted other events for Joe Biden. And of course, he is a Hollywood elite. So this not only probably surprised him, but bruised his ego, because obviously you don't not notice.
Like, who doesn't know George Clooney?
And George Clooney knows that. And he's, who doesn't notice me? So he's offended, first of all. Second of all, I think it was a moment where he started questioning his life choices. Like, he hadn't been around Biden in a while, and he's called in to do this, show his allegiance, kiss the ring. And he's, oh, dang, am I really going to do that for this guy? He doesn't even know who I am. Like, that, you know, it's one of those very clarifying moments, I'm sure.
Yeah, the way, this is how it is in the New Yorker. It says that the president walks in, and he's shuffling in, and it says, thank you for being here, the president said to the guests as he shuffled past them. Thank you for being here. Clooney felt a knot in his stomach as the president approached him. Biden looked at him. Thank you for being here, he said. Thank you for being here. George, the assisting aide, told the president, gently reminding him who was in front of him.
Yeah,
the president said, to one of the most recognizable men in the world, the host of this lucrative fundraiser. Thank you for being here.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, what was interesting is that I was watching, what was I watching yesterday? I was watching Mark Halpern's Two Way Tonight yesterday. And he had on a man named Rufus. I cannot remember.
I love that name, by the way.
Oh, you love Rufus?
I love the name Rufus. Great. That's a strong name. It's bold. You're going to grow up, really. You're going to have to just be confident. With the
really?
Name,
you
like
think
Rufus.
So? Like,
yes.
Okay.
You gotta own it.
Anyways, sidetrack. So Rufus Gifford. And so he had him.
That's even better.
I know.
Rufus, I mean, it's amazing.
He had him on 2A Tonight. And if you guys have a chance to watch it, I think it's really worth a watch, because Mark Halpern has been really up in arms about this entire thing. And mainly because he is a journalist, a trustworthy journalist, and he's upset about how this has put the media in a negative light. So he had Rufus on, and Rufus claims that this did not happen. So Rufus worked with the Biden administration. He helped coordinate a lot of these events. And he says that he was like one of the 10 people that was in the room at the time, and that this is not how it went down. He claims that it doesn't even make sense that it would have gone down this way, because typically there was like a receiving line and people walk in and they like do announcements, as in it's immediately the tradition is to be immediately introducing people, not in a sense of where you just walk in and you start walking around socializing.
So he's saying that, but what if there was that like ahead of time before he went in to meet the general public? What if he was brought in to say a hello, a greeting to Julia Roberts and George Clooney ahead of meeting everybody else? And it did happen.
Well, I mean, that's not the way it's laid out in the book. In the book, okay, it's laid out that this is in the green room backstage when everybody's like initially meeting.
I see.
And Rufus is saying, like, he says that didn't happen and that wouldn't make any sense for an opportunity for that to happen, because that's not how things are usually done.
Okay.
Rufus, were you at the famous George Clooney fundraiser?
I was, and I was I was one of the eight people in the room when this infamous moment happened.
So do you
Rufus
think
it was in the room?
Do you think it's true that he didn't recognize George Clooney?
No, is the answer to the question. And it, I mean, and not only that, it's like an absurd thing.
Right. So
what happens here is this, like George and Julia were standing in front, I was literally right there. George and Julia standing right in front of the curtains that get ready to just take photos that they always do. Cause as the presidents walk in, and then the advance guy comes in and says to President Biden and President Obama, President Biden, see George and Julia, George Clooney and Julia Roberts. And it was, I will say this, when I read this in the book, I was like, this did never happen. But I do read some of this stuff like that's in the Thompson Tapper book. And I'm like, guys, this is so salacious and ridiculous. And no one was there. So no one's going to deny it. And it's just crazy to me. But that being
said. But hold on. I just want to clarify this thing. You were there and you were standing right there. You weren't over on the side of the room. And you can say without fear of any contradiction, and you remember clearly, the president did not know. He knew who George Clooney was.
It's like not knowing someone is in the photo line. You're introduced to them. So you're saying, Mr. President, George, this is your host, George Clooney and Julia Roberts. And he walked.
But you heard the person say that.
Yeah, his advance guy. Yeah, that's what happens to every single
time. So you're saying there was no opportunity for the president not to recognize George
Clooney. That's right. I mean, so George might have thought he didn't know who he was, but I mean, it just, that moment didn't exist.
I think it's a really interesting interview to watch because Halperin really puts the screws to Rufus Gifford, trying to call him out and be like, how did you, I mean, is it for real? Like, for real, you didn't know, because for real, like, everybody knew. Yeah. And that's the crux of this. Like, a lot of people are focused on whether he recognized George Clooney, the fact that he needed possibly a wheelchair because of spinal degeneration, and his aides were trying to say that it was an ankle issue, it wasn't his spine or anything really physical about him. And I think the bigger thing is that another thing that I was listening to Halperin talk about when they were covering this up, or when they were discussing, covering it up, when they were discussing this book, is that the book has no significant revelations, which was something that even The New Yorker wrote about. The New Yorker wrote this article about 6 takeaways of the book on Original Sin. And one of the big things that it pointed out is that there's really no bombshell significant revelations, because they're just confirming, they're calling it a cover-up, but they're really, the book is just confirming what everybody saw with their own eyeballs for a long time. And all it's really providing is supplemental stories to things that we basically already knew. And the fact that the book cites, we have 200 sources, nobody is on the record. All of these 200
anonymous sources.
They're That's all anonymous. Yeah, nobody is on the record. And so at the end of the day, it looks like, and Halperin pointed this out, it looks like a collection of stories that is just going to confirm what we all knew. But the bigger story is not revealed. The actual cover-up or the big question is not answered. To what extent was this an issue? Mm-hmm. Who was running the government? Who actually knew and was covering for Biden, and who was being told how to govern for Biden, or who was being lied to and just like unwillingly perpetuated this lie? And that question appears to not be answered in this book. So I don't know what cover up they're uncovering.
Well, and it's really sad to me that there's no one in the ranks that's willing to just come forward. And at this point, honestly, I don't even think it would garner any respect anyways, because it's too late. Like, it should have been a while ago. There was that one Democrat operative. She collected donors for the Democrat Party. She was on the Sean Green show.
Yeah, Lee. Oh, my gosh.
She spilled all. And she was willing to come forward and be like, look, I was a part of this, and it was nuts.
Do you know that she's doing, like, a View version for the right conservatives?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's her.
Wait, did I know that? I don't
Jillian know. Michaels, Anna Kasparian, and then I don't know, one or two other chicks or whatever. Nice. I've only seen clips of it on X. So,
oh wow, I'm here for that. But yeah, I don't understand why no one, because who are they going to lose? I mean, I suppose that they would look like they're turning their back on their party, so maybe they would.
I can tell you what I think. I think this is definitely the bigger issue. Mm-hmm. These people are within the Democrat machine. If another candidate is going to step forward to run for president in 2028, or a senator, anyone within the Democrat Party, some of these individuals are going to be on those teams again at some point. And so they don't want to put their name out there because there's two things. First of all, what does that do to them professionally in regards to trustworthiness if they get attached to another campaign? That's number one.
Well, people are going to trust them again. Yeah.
Correct. And number two, if this administration decides to actually probe this, which a lot of people are like, why aren't we investigating this and trying to figure out exactly who was the president and who was covering this up? That's also pretty significant because what are the legal ramifications to that? Mm-hmm. And so I think that I don't think this is a thing about concerns of betraying the DNC or their Democrats or whatever. The Democrats are in the toilet right now.
Yeah.
If anything, I think it would help them because the Democrat voter themselves is upset that this happened.
Yeah.
But they're not concerned about the Democrat voter. They're concerned about themselves, their profession, and possibly any legal ramifications that may come of this because of this cover-up. I think that's why nobody wants to go on the record. I don't think this is anything about, oh, not wanting to betray the... No, I think this is a CYA situation.
Mm-hmm.
And to answer your question that you asked earlier, like, why is Alex Thompson attaching himself to Jake Tapper? One of the things that I felt, apparently, I think maybe he has been caught a little bit off guard because both of them, especially Jake Tapper, is getting a lot of heat from both sides, both left and right, but especially in regards to people pointing out the hypocrisy of this book, specifically because of Jake Tapper's affiliation to it, that they have hired a crisis management person to deal with it. That's the rumor that I heard yesterday. And it's just wild to me because I really think that Thompson did it, first of all, because he needed a name that had some like trust behind it, some recognition behind it, and that would push the sale of the book. And I would say out of all of the choices that were out there.
I mean, what are the choices really?
There's not many unless he was going to align himself with, I don't know, Megyn Kelly or something like that. But the problem is that.
Right.
And it's not just that, but you have to realize that he not only needed the name to push the book, but he needed Jake Tapper because he needs Jake Tapper's Rolodex. He needs his access to the DNC. He needs his access to the White House or the now gone White House.
Exactly.
And for people to be willing to talk to someone that they would trust. And Jake Tapper is that person for them. But the problem is that once you go and publish the book, everybody else that you want to buy the book is going, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
I don't think this is... I think there's a little bit of hypocrisy here, right? And so there's been a lot of discussion about how Jake Tapper was, in fact, covering for Biden. And so much so, they hired reportedly a crisis manager. And Alex Thompson shared a video on his X the other day, specifically calling out Tom Elliott. Are you familiar with who Tom Elliott is?
No.
So he creates videos that go viral. And the video that was going around from 2020 of when Jake Tapper got into that dispute or got heated with Laura Trump.
Oh, yes. About,
remember? Yeah. So it was 2020. Laura Trump points out that Biden is not looking well. It's likely cognitive decline. And Jake Tapper takes her to task.
Yeah. About, saying it's just a stutter. How dare you?
So that video starts making the rounds again. And Alex Thompson shares a video that is very well, what's the word I'm looking for? Curated and very polished, and calls out Tom Elliott specifically about this clip that's going around. And here's evidence that Jake Tapper has, in fact, from the beginning, been questioning the Biden cover-up or whatever.
Yeah.
And I watched the clip and it is so like precisely and perfectly curated to cover for Tapper.
Will you pledge that if you're elected, you will be transparent about your health, yes. all facets of your health, with urgency so that we know.
Yes.
One poll shows that almost two-thirds of Democratic voters want a new nominee in 2024, and the top reason they gave was your age. You know, that's not a good number for President Biden. The two-thirds of the American people say he's not sharp enough to be president.
Yeah, I mean, how can you use the bully pulpit when you don't have a bully you can put in the pulpit?
Okay, so you're part of the 23% of adults who are not concerned about the president's ability to be president because of his age and stamina. I mean, I know incumbents in general are not popular right now, but do you ever think maybe we should have a new candidate?
There's a little bit of denialism with the president.
This is a particularly bad week for this report and its comments about President Biden's faculties and his memory to come out, because twice this week he has acted as if he, in 2021, spoke to European leaders who have been dead for years. Part of the job of president is the having the confidence of the American people in your faculties.
The White House's response every single time it has come up for 3.5 years has been to deflect, to gaslight, to not tell the truth, not just to reporters, not just to other Democrats, but even at times to themselves.
That one isn't the only one, though. I mean, like, I was watching some compilation yesterday. There were multiple occasions where he shot down even the insinuation that there was something wrong with Biden.
I think that's the bigger issue, because I was digging through this because I want to be fair. Like, if he was calling him out, I'd be like, okay, yeah, he was calling him out. But when I was digging through clips and things, what I noticed was, for example, there's a super cut from a Grabian. Mm-hmm. And when you watch it, it is clear that initially what he is talking about mm-hmm. is him physically. His concerns are whether or not Biden can run for president for a second term physically. Mm-hmm. But any mention of his cognitive decline.
Nope, he shut it down real quick.
He would shut it down.
Yeah.
So then there was at this point, this one to me was just like, I cannot believe the audacity of this man. Okay. Because I'm gonna show this to you.
So can't wait.
Disturbed by this. But to set it out for you, give you guys a little bit of context. Another outlet that was reporting about Biden's decline was the Wall Street Journal. And it's two okay. women,
yep.
staff writers, and they published an article that was about Biden's decline is worse than people think. And like, mm-hmm. nobody's talking about it. I can't remember exactly the title, but it's going to be in the clip. And the authors of this article got reamed, absolutely reamed. It's like the same reaction that you got from when the special investigator, put out his report. Same deal. Like, they were just getting absolutely ripped. And mind you, this is what's very important to know is that this is before the debate. This is before everybody was like, oh, right. okay, he has imploded.
It's over.
Yeah. So I'm going to play for you first this clip of Tapper. And then I'm going to play for you a second clip so I can provide some comparison.
Okay.
President Biden's age, mental fitness, ability to lead, of those supporting Biden, you said, quote, shame on all of you pretending everything is okay. You're leading us and him into a disaster. Do you worry that you damaged him at all? I don't doubt that you got hugs and mm-hmm. and handshakes behind closed doors today, and maybe even publicly, some of them, because they like you personally. But I've heard a lot of really nasty stuff about you from your Democratic colleagues. Sure. I mean, just like, what is he thinking? Exercise in narcissism. I mean, false claims to the Wall Street Journal about President Biden's mental fitness and acuity. He's 81 and his memory, you know, it doesn't seem great. It's not horrible, but I don't understand the outrage. Quote, behind closed doors, Biden shows signs of slipping, unquote. The Wall Street Journal is owned by News Corp, which is run by the Murdochs. Beyond the headline, there is some critical nuance here. The article is mostly based on observations of Republicans, with former Speaker Kevin McCarthy the only one going on the record. They do note in the article that most of the criticism comes from Republicans. Have you heard any concerns from anyone who has met with President Biden about him seeming a little slower?
No.
Wow.
So that was him speaking first with Dean Phillips, which was the one person that was actually running against Biden. And then you heard him there also talking about the Wall Street Journal article that I was mentioning. Mm-hmm. And it was clear that he is poking a little bit at Dean Phillips for...
Well, he straight up said everybody in the Democrat Party hates you because you're actually talking about the thing. And Dean Phillips is just sitting there smiling. Yeah, he has nothing to lose. He's fine. He knows he's not going to be president. He's a little bit old school. He's not a liar. Mm-hmm. No, I'm just going to say it. And he's like, well, you're... What I did was how... Not just snarky, but kind of like a bully a little bit, or it's just it's like a mean girl. Well, you may be getting like high fives in public, but behind closed doors, everybody thinks you're the worst and hates you. It's so transparent even then, but now, and that he got a book deal. You know what it is too, is I think that segment of the legacy media has such like an obtuse idea of their own importance that I think Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson, to a degree, they all thought that this was like their Woodward and Bernstein moment. They thought, we're going to blow the lid off this huge cover up. And it's, dude, you're not uncovering anything. We all knew it. You're just now writing a book and making it come to life again. Like, I could write a more informative book, if I'm honest, because I was keeping receipts all those years. And if he has 200 anonymous sources, well, I mean... I can find a bunch of anonymous sources too. They're just all my friends who are watching TV with me. It's just silly.
And you notice how he framed the Wall Street Journal article. He was like, oh, by the way, it's owned by Rupert Murdoch and it was only Republicans who were talking. So he's basically like undermining the article and questioning the article. He's not flat out saying this is a bunch of falsehoods or anything like
that.
No,
he's saying it's just owned by a bunch of creeps.
So yeah, exactly.
Don't believe any of it.
Just save that in the back of your brain, because wait until I show you what he was doing yesterday.
Okay? But wait, there's more.
But wait, there is more. I was just like, seriously, dude, the audacity of this man. I can't. Okay, you have to see this. Just to set it up for you, these are the Wall Street Journal reporters that wrote that article.
Okay. The heroic reporters were covering this intensely. During the Biden years, Annie Linsky and Siobhan Hughes, they are with the Wall Street Journal. They reported on the decline of Biden's mental acuity back in June of last year. The piece then, quote, behind closed doors, Biden shows signs of slipping. Participants in meetings said the 81-year-old president performed poorly at times. The White House said Biden is sharp and his critics are playing partisan politics, unquote. This is not the first time you guys have been on. I said it last year before the election, and I'll say it again. The journalism you did was vital, and the smear campaign by Democrats against you two is disgraceful. So thanks for being here.
You mean like your smear campaign, Jake?
I cannot. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you talking about?
You are the people that you're apologizing for. Get a clue.
So, yeah, look, am I going to read this book? Yes.
Yes, I am.
Am I going to do the best that I can to try and decode who the anonymous source is that's saying XYZ? Yes. Yeah.
So there's not one person who's going on the record.
Look, I haven't yet to read the book. I am only going by secondhand reports. But reportedly, there's nobody on the record. There are people who are identifiable, like clearly David Plouffe? Is that what was his name? I know his last name was Plouffe. He was Kamala Harris. He ran Obama's campaign and then he jumped on to run Kamala Harris. And he was the one that was saying, look, Biden totally did us dirty and we were digging out of a hole. There is a quote in there that's been cited a few times that is like I would bet money it was him. That said that. It just sounds like him.
Yeah.
But as far as I know, there's no sources. And then another thing that Mark Halperin pointed out about this was, do you remember that Biden at one point, he was doing an event, and I think there was a bill that was being passed that was sponsored by a representative. Her name was Jackie Walorski. Mm-hmm. And she had died months before.
Oh, yes, I remember.
In a car accident.
And he introduced her like she was there at the party. We all watched it. We all saw it.
Biden's like, is Jackie here? Where's Jackie? She's
dead. Yeah. And then Karine Jean-Pierre got up in the press briefing room and was grilled by a few more bold journalists who were like, so about that, do you want to talk about that? And she's, look, he has to remember lots of things. And sometimes
Jackie was at the front of his mind.
Yeah, is the front of his mind. What? Mm-hmm. Come on.
Exactly. But think about we're about to come up on a year of the infamous debate disaster. Yep. But this time last year, we were just weeks, maybe a month or so out from where Biden went to the
G20, excuse me.
Yeah, sorry, the G20 in Italy, where he like roamed off.
Oh, it was painful to watch. And what's her name?
Maloney.
Maloney went over. It was a very female intuition moment where she was trying to be nurturing and like
and guide the old man
care for him
over.
But she did, you saw her like walk over like, where are you going? Because they were watching someone parachute in and they landed and the guy parachutes over there to the left and Biden's walking to the right but like standing there and staring for a while, like how my husband will walk by a window and stare out at the farm and all of us girls will come to the kitchen.
What are you looking at?
And he's
my
like,
husband
I'm looking,
does the same thing.
I'm looking at the farm. We just call, I mean, dads just look out windows. That's just what they do. But Biden was doing this in an open field where there was nothing to look at. And a bunch of his counterparts from different countries were standing over there. And he just like aimlessly walks off, stands there. And Maloney sees him. And you can tell she has a moment of recognition. Oh my gosh, this is as bad as I've heard. And walks over and kind of like puts her hand and turns him like, come on, friend, join the rest of us.
There was multiple situations like that in that window, because you remember he is building up to the debate. He's having a bunch of events.
Yeah.
He's trying to show that he is capable. He during, I think before that, he was also in France for an event. And there was like moments there where he, first of all, didn't know whether or not he should sit down.
Yeah.
He wandered off a little bit. He wandered off in Italy with Maloney. Then he had the fundraiser in LA where he froze on the stage after it happened. And like when they were finishing up and Obama had to grab his attention again and guide him off the stage. And what was the talking point? What were they saying when everybody was pointing out the problem, when all of these clips and all of these videos started to go viral? What was the White House saying? No, it wasn't even the White House. Who was the first to report on this, on alleged cheap fakes, which is what they tried to frame it? It was the Washington Post. The Washington Post was one of the first publications to put out there that Republicans are using strategically clipped videos to misrepresent and make Biden look bad. These are cheap fakes. And then Karine Jean-Pierre from the White House like press podium recited the same cover up. Oh, these are cheap fakes. And then what? A month later, he literally implodes on the stage.
Yep.
They were all lying.
They were. And it wasn't just that. Like he tripped going up into Air Force One. And then you had, I remember, because if remember the whole debacle about his shoes? We are going to spend the entire podcast talking about this. We have other segments we have to move on to.
We're about to move on to it real quick.
But remember the whole debacle about his shoes and how they basically had lifts in them to make him more comfortable?
Well, they were more like stable, like stabilizing. They had
like
a wider
shoes.
Sole.
They were huge, right? I remember, I think it was Inside Edition, did an entire segment on their show about how that's completely normal and it's just for comfortability for the president. A segment, like they gave airtime to discussing this and telling whoever still watches Inside Edition, calm down. These are the normal pair of shoes for someone his age to wear. It has nothing to do with the fact that his gait is totally, it was unmissable that something has changed in the way he walks that many people describe seeing in their family members who have Alzheimer's or dementia. And he had outlets like running cover for him constantly. And then when the reality was shattered on the night that he was up there on the stage, everybody then started really slowly backing into the bushes and acting like they didn't do that.
And that was when it was safe to start criticizing him. And that Jake Tapper did go to town on Biden after the debate. So I don't know. What's really disappointing is I'm not expecting this book to reveal an actual cover-up. There's nobody, apparently, that is on the record. I don't expect any huge revelation, but I do want to read it because I want to see the extent that this man has the audacity to claim that he has revealed a cover-up when he has not done anything whatsoever. And I think it's really important too. And I am actually grateful that this book is coming out, because this brings the entire conversation back to the forefront and hopefully mm-hmm. pushes forward some type of investigation. Because what I want to know is, who was the president? Who was the president at the time? I think we all have our own suspicions, but
no, but I want to know who had access to the auto pin and who was signing all those papers and who was pardoning everybody at the last minute.
Like, this is one of the biggest scandals.
I've been saying this forever, and people thought, and I was saying, we need a 25th Amendment. This guy, he needs to be out. This is inappropriate. This is not okay. This is a danger and a threat to national security. And people are like, you're crazy, because they are so excited to win. It was obvious that they were going to hand us the election because they ran him and then Kamala, even worse, maybe. And I was like, but still, like, he was in there for a solid, when did we see? It was June 27th, July, August, September, October. I mean, 4 months after, we still had this guy sitting as our sitting president, commander in chief of the army. And he was a vegetable. And I'm sorry, people don't like that, but it is very accurate when talking about his mental state. He was not there, and he exhibited that on numerous occasions. And it wasn't just starting June 27th.
No,
this
and that's
going on for several years. This is a scandal that everybody's like, I wrote about the other day. I think our country is so used to ridiculous corruption that this happened, and they're like, yeah, that sounds about right. And I'm over here, this is not okay.
And that's the thing, like, this whole, because even Tapper talks about it as if the decline didn't happen until maybe 2022.
Right.
Dude, we've been seeing this from, like, before he decided to run for president. So give me a break, okay?
Correct.
So I think we've talked enough about Biden. As we mentioned, we're definitely going to be reading the book. I think mm-hmm. Rachel and I have been also toying with the idea of doing a little book club situation mm-hmm. between both of our, all three of our Substacks. So stay tuned for details on that, on exactly how we're going to do it. And then if you're going to be reading the book, you can join us even if you don't want to buy the book. Even if you just want to hear our thoughts, it'll be fun. It'll be a good time. But we'll be sharing some more details on that. But speaking of presidents who can walk on their two feet and stay, well, relatively awake, did you see Trump was dozing off a little bit? Poor guy.
I mean, what do you expect? If anybody tries to be like, look at, he's old, he's fallen asleep. No, spare me. The man gets like 3 hours of sleep a night and is everywhere all at once.
All the time.
I mean, all the time. He's everywhere. So no, I'm not
buying
that.
Did you see the picture of your boy?
Oh my gosh, his poor face. That guy is so tired. He is so tired. And I want to know, are you seeing your wife ever? Is it like when they're in prison and they get one visit like a month?
You know that picture of Marco Rubio, I put it on my story.
Please send it to me. That's my new GIF. I always use the drugged out crackhead Barbie when I'm tired. But I think I'm going to start using Marco. Like Marco Rubio's tired face, GIF is my favorite.
He looks hot, uncomfortable, exhausted, yes,
all
belly
of the above.
Showing.
Oh, my word. Send it to me.
I put a caption on him. The man has four jobs and he's jet lagged. Okay. Give him a break. Okay.
Yeah, seriously.
So what has the president been up to while in the Middle East?
Everything. He's literally meeting with everybody.
So let's see. He visited Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and he's headed to the UAE today.
Right now he's on a plane.
He secured a reported $600 billion in Saudi investments.
Nobody in the media is talking about that.
I mean, they're mentioning it, but it's not a big deal.
But like begrudgingly. They're like, I guess it's okay.
This included $142 billion in defense. And then the rest of it is actually going to be investment that Saudi is going to be doing in the U.S. So I don't know exactly what that is going to look like. Are we talking about businesses? Are we talking about real estate? What are we talking about here? So, but, you know, a lot of money coming in. Also, that $243.5 billion from Qatar. Notably, a $96 billion Boeing order, which is huge because that means that Boeing's probably going to have to do a ramp up. Boeing is also doing an image revamp.
Rebrand.
Too. Yeah. So we'll see how well that goes.
A hard couple of years. I did look over at Sean. I was listening to, it was right after it was announced that they were going to be purchasing all of these planes. And I like looked over at Sean real quick. I'm like, go look at the Boeing stock. Go look at the Boeing stock. And he's like, it's too late. It's already like skyrocketing.
It's already shot up.
We can't.
Dang it. If we would have had some inside information, but that's illegal. And then I think probably the biggest thing that made my eyebrow raise was that he met with the new Syrian president, Ahmed al-Shara, I believe is how you pronounce it.
Yeah, we talked about him a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, so when Amanda Peterson was on with us, she gave us the background on Syria, the change from, oh my gosh, who was his name?
I don't remember his name. They had two names each.
No, I'm talking about the guy that got overthrown. Oh my gosh, my brain just...
It's okay.
Yeah, it's early. Okay, anyways, so the guy that had the 40-year regime, he got overthrown. Assad. Oh!
You did it!
So Assad is out. This new president is in. The debate is, where does he stand? He's trying to sell himself as a moderate, but he has ties to Al-Qaeda. He was at one point held in Abu Ghraib and then later released.
And he, while he was incarcerated or held, whatever you want to say, he met with an ISIS leader. I'm just saying there's some interesting affiliations here.
And so the question is, do those affiliations remain, or has this man seen the light? And maybe he's not exactly, I don't know, completely democratic or whatever, but has he softened his radical stances versus what we believe he used to be? Especially because I think the last time that when we talked with Amanda, we mentioned that he issued a proclamation that there would be no proselytizing, which is pretty important because typically that's where a lot of the violence bubbles up. And then the big question is, like, how are they going to treat the minorities within Syria?
Yep.
And we talked about that in the last episode. Reportedly, a lot of the attacks that were happening to the Christians and the other religious minorities. But these religious minorities that were within Syria, that the attacks that was happening on them was like rogue groups, because they were in the process of the turnover of the government. Mm-hmm. And that since he issued that proclamation, that those attacks have been under control.
They've simmered.
So this entire thing and the way Trump is creating relationships in the Middle East, especially for individuals like you and I who vividly remember 9/11 and before 9/11 and the war and everything like that, it is a kind of a weird place to be.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, it was like in his speech. So he also did a speech at the Saudi Arabia Investment Forum. And the speech, there was specifically one portion of the speech that really laid out a completely new vision of foreign policy.
It was a new world order, like basically criticizing the way we've been doing it for a long time and presenting a new idea for moving forward. Great speech.
It was really good. I mean, he was specifically calling out the nation building, the neocon policies, the interventionalism. Am I saying that correctly?
It's okay. They understand.
The transformations have been unbelievably remarkable. Before our eyes, a new generation of leaders is transcending the ancient conflicts of tired divisions of the past and forging a future where the Middle East is defined by commerce, not chaos, where it exports technology, not terrorism, and where people of different nations, religions, and creeds are building cities together, not bombing each other out of existence. We don't want that. And it's crucial for the wider world to note this great transformation has not come from Western interventionists or flying people in beautiful planes giving you lectures on how to live and how to govern your own affairs. No, the gleaming marvels of Riyadh and Abu Dhabi were not created by the so-called nation builders, neocons, or liberal nonprofits like those who spent trillions and trillions of dollars failing to develop Kabul, Baghdad, so many other cities. Instead, the birth of a modern Middle East has been brought by the people of the region themselves, the people that are right here, the people that have lived here all their lives, developing your own sovereign countries, pursuing your own unique visions and charting your own destinies in your own way. It's really incredible what you've done. In the end, the so-called nation builders wrecked far more nations than they built, and the interventionists were intervening in complex societies that they did not even understand themselves. They told you how to do it, but they had no idea how to do it themselves. Peace, prosperity, and progress ultimately came not from a radical rejection of your heritage, but rather from embracing your national traditions and embracing that same heritage that you love so dearly.
I thought it was really telling because one of the things that he really believes, first of all, it is clear to me that he really just wants peace. He does not want conflict. And this idea of spreading democracy across the world and that you need to live our way of life in order for you to be successful, he's like, no more. He yeah. basically says, clearly, you guys have to choose how you want to live your lives. And we'll enter into commerce with you. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, and then his belief, Trump's belief, is that through commerce, they will improve, the situation will get better, and that will lead to peace. Because as people get more comfortable, mm-hmm. hopefully, the idea of things become more peaceful. Now, mind you, this was a very similar idea with what they had with China yep. many years ago. Mm-hmm. So I'm not opposed to experimenting with this new way, but I definitely think we need to be, it's trust but verify, like a yeah. good old Reagan line.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly like what strings are attached to these deals. What kind of commitments are we expecting from them in order for us to partner with them?
Yeah.
Because Trump was essentially saying, we're not going to nation build anymore. You have your culture. Clearly, you guys are showing much more success. I've seen reports that within Saudi Arabia with this new prince, that they have advanced significantly. They have new buildings. I think mm-hmm. I saw a report from one, because Fox News is over there. A bunch of press is over there embedded right now. And I think it was Peter Ducey where
he
said,
was on last night.
Yeah, he said something like, I approached this woman who was not covered. Mm-hmm. She had her hair out. I thought she was Western. And I asked her where she was from, where she was visiting from. And she's, I'm from here. I've lived here my whole life. And it was like a recognition that, yeah, maybe things aren't obviously like the United States. Clearly, they still have many dictatorial tendencies, but that things are lifting and things are changing.
I think that Trump touches on something that's really, I've struggled and wrestled with it a lot because obviously being an American, only ever living here my whole life, I believe that this is the best way to institute a federal government. I believe that a democratic republic is by far the most superior form of government. It offers the most benefits and protected rights to its citizens. I can't imagine living under another type of regime. But that being said, I often struggle with the fact that there's a whole progressive wing in our country that decries colonialism and what started our country. And yet they want to be able to go into other countries around the world and basically colonize it with their belief. Instead of just going, I don't need to tell Saudi Arabia or the UAE or somewhere in South Africa, I don't need to tell them that they need to have my same form of government. They're going to do what they're going to do. I don't need to impose what I think is the best way of life because that's not my country. It's their country. And we do it a lot. Like, we go into these countries and say, what you're doing is horrendous and wrong simply because it doesn't align. And I'm not talking about necessarily human rights violations. I'm just talking about normal, my rub against our very libertarian, don't tread on me type of idea. And I think that's the best way to be and live. But I don't need to now take that and go over to, say, Northern Africa and tell them this, you need to do it my way. And we do that quite a bit actually in foreign affairs, or we have. And so yeah. I think it's refreshing for him to be like, look, our way is the best way. That's what we think, but we're not here to tell you, you have to adopt it. You might want to after you do business with us and your life becomes enriched, but we'll see.
Well, you know? And I think the other thing is because a lot of people have some concerns, and this will be a talking point, and especially people on the left will be like, oh, he's cozying up to a monarchy or imperialist or, you know.
What would you like him to do?
Yeah.
What are we supposed to pretend all of the countries don't exist anymore.
Because, well, also, are we supposed to pretend that we weren't a monarchy at some point?
Yeah, it's not that, that far removed. What do they want? I listened to, and I know I sent it to you, and we both could rage talk about it forever. But I listened to two progressive gals yesterday on a political podcast talk about how ticked they were that he went over there, and he's over there talking to these heads of state, and he's trying to make peace with them. They're, like, righteously angry. And I'm listening to them going, okay, but what's the alternative? What do you want him to do? Do you want him to go over there and get really angry and chastise them and treat them like children? Do you think that will go well? Or do you want him to sit in the White House and do nothing? I mean, we get that you don't want him to be president, but he is. And he has to have some relationship with world leaders. So what lane would you like him to be in? Do you want him to be overly aggressive? I'm pretty sure you don't. Not with the Middle East, not with what's going on with Iran, not with the ongoing conflict in Israel and Gaza. Why are these Democrats and progressives so angry about a president who's trying to make relationships or better relationships, ease some tension, try and go in there and be like, look, let's work together and move towards peace? Why is that making them so angry? Is conflict the point? Is that what they want? Is they want conflict so then it's married to the second term?
Well, and that I get, I don't know. And that's the thing, because that was the point that I was about to make, was that a lot of times, like, they're upset about that. And yeah. I'm like, well, what do you want? Do you want him to nation build? Do you want him to cause war or to force things
right
again? Do you want him to do the same thing again? Or, because the strategy is, and I have this feeling, like, I feel a little bit weird investing and partnering financially and enriching a country that they're... choices and their practices, especially when it comes to human rights and that sort of thing, are a little more than questionable. Yeah. But also at the same time, what he is trying to do, and we'll see if this works out. So I don't necessarily know 100% whether I think this is a good idea, but I'm willing to try something new because clearly everything else hasn't worked. But what he's attempting to do is, like, through partnerships and enriching and helping these countries do for themselves with our assistance. So I don't know how much for themselves it is, but that as they become more advanced, more comfortable, it will ease the tensions within the Middle East, which then lowers the possibility of war breaking out in the region and possibly spreading outwards.
Well, he's basically maybe betting we get these guys fat and happy and real comfortable. They're going to be too distracted to fight.
Exactly. And this whole thing of, for example, them pointing out, oh, he goes to the Middle East and he didn't go to the EU, or like how he's treating the EU. We already have relationship with them.
You know,
they're we're not in conflict. Well, we're not necessarily, there's not a conflict over there. Yeah. We already have a relationship with them. Everybody has their eye together in different levels on Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones who have abused their relationship with us. The Middle East is a whole other situation. And especially when it comes to commerce and trade, settling the situation in the Middle East, especially if you want to be concerned about our ally in the Middle East, Israel, is a good thing. So I don't, like, this whole mentality, it's like, it doesn't matter what he does. Either he goes over there and tries to create peace, which, by the way, I think what's really interesting is that the previous administration, both Biden and Obama, all they did was cozy up to Iran, who is literally the worst in the region.
Correct. So, but that was more comfortable to them because it happened in the Oval Office and there was a little bit of discussions and it was like, you know, and they could package it up and put it to bed. He does everything literally right out in the open. He's, I'm not doing backdoor deals. I mean, obviously he's a president, so he is, but he is so transparent. He's, I'm just going to go over and meet with everybody. I'm meeting with all the people, bring them all in. We're having trade deals. I'm going to the Middle East. I'm meeting with all of the leaders. Whereas Biden met with nobody, and the people he did meet with and lifted sanctions for passed that money straight on to terrorist organizations. And it's just like,
well, and
where are those people? Where was that duo, those angry progressive ladies, when he was doing that? There's nothing. There's radio silent. It really is, in a very stark way, I'm realizing how very real and palpable Trump derangement syndrome is. And I don't say that as a Trump sycophant, because I'm not. I voted for him, but I'm not an apologist. I'm simply observing reality in that people are so upset about him being the president for whatever reason that it is infecting their minds so much so that they cannot see a net good when it hits in the face. There are objectively good things he's doing as a president, and they refuse. In fact, they don't even just refuse to acknowledge it. They will gaslight whoever will listen to them about why it's actually bad, what he's doing, why it's actually going to be a net harm for America. And it's when you start seeing it, it's crazy. It's mental gymnastics, really.
And I think it is a little fair because people have been criticizing, like, yes, the Trump organization has business in the Middle East. Like, they have hotels and they have real estate and there's partnerships with countries, Qatar, for example. And so I think it is fair to side-eye that and be concerned with it. But there's a big difference between the business existed. They already had existing relationships. And to me, at least so far, it seems like any kind of relationship that the president is doing currently is in favor of the United States, as opposed to the last president. We had a whole lot of like side deals, allegedly, but pretty clearly, that was more about enriching their pockets and the United States being second. So that's probably one of the main criticisms that come from the left. And I think it's fair only in that you should be aware that those relationships pre-existed. They're going to exist after Trump is out. And you make sure that those things aren't abused. But it also doesn't mean that every single thing that he does is nefarious or corrupt or anything like that. So I don't know. It remains to be seen. His trip is not over.
No, it's not. He's on his way to the UAE. I just saw him board a plane. I will say this real quick. Can we all talk about how very tall Saudi Arabia's leader is? I mean, Donald Trump is not a small man. And he's standing next to these leaders. I'm all, these dudes are all big. Like,
I said the same thing.
Huge.
That to my husband. I was like, oh my gosh, look how tall that dude is. And I'm like, he's taller than Trump is. And Trump was so funny because he, I mean, that's one of the things about him going and actually participating in this. Because mind you, when Biden went, he went over there begging for them to release oil reserves and stuff because he had an election coming up and he needed the gas prices to go down. He did not get the level of pomp and circumstance.
No, are you kidding? They rolled out the red carpet.
It was purple, but
purple, sorry. They had music.
Horses, camels.
It was incredible. It felt like in Aladdin when Prince Ali was rolling into town. And I'm not even, that is not a pejorative. That it was amazing. These people know how to party and they know how to welcome a head of state.
It was funny when he was touring the, I don't know, house, mansion, whatever, of the Emir of Qatar.
Yeah.
He's standing in this giant room with these giant, and you see Trump, he's like tiny over there in the shot with the Emir and his wife, I guess, and whoever. And he just goes, what a house.
I know. Well, and you see him walking through, I mean, a lot of the stuff is actually really nice there, like beautiful and modern and just, it's gorgeous. And he, you see him walking and you see his eyes because he loves nice things. He loves beautiful homes and properties, and he's walking through. You can feel the wheels turning in his head, like the White House needs some upgrades. Look at this place. This place is incredible. And he loves the White House. He's always talking about how beautiful it is, how it's the best house in the world, it's the best property in the world, blah blah blah. But you see him walking around and just going, this is a palace. I need a palace. You know what I mean?
It has been entertaining watching him.
Yes, definitely.
All right, so that's good. That was fun. He, I don't know, we'll see who he has. He was talking about camels. He was talking about palaces. It was a really good time for him. We're going to move on because today is Thursday, and we're going to do some questions real quick. These are questions that our paying supporters submit, and we answer on Thursdays. So what you got there, girlfriend?
All right. Crystal wants to know, what is your favorite kitchen tool?
Oh, my gosh. My knife. Know.
Your knife, you have a nice fancy
I have, look, let me tell you, as a former chef, food blogger extraordinaire for a time, I'm not really, but okay. Like, a lot of people will get into, like, they need this gadget or that gadget or this thing that cuts avocado and this, that. No, okay. There's like, I maybe should do a post about this. There's like maybe 10 tools that you really need in your kitchen, fundamental tools. You need one good saucepan, one good stock pan, a quality knife. Mm-hmm. And you can have a quality knife without breaking the bank. My personal knife, the one I use, the brand is Misen, M-I-S-E-N, I believe is how you print, is how you spell it. Great knives. I think you can get a knife for like $50 at the most. Treat your knife with care and respect. If I catch you putting that knife in a dishwasher or using it on a glass cutting board, I will come and haunt you in your sleep, okay?
I do not do either of those things. I do not.
For me, hands down, a lot of people will be surprised, but it's my knife. My knife and my cast iron skillet. Very utilitarian, very basic, but they are the things, my knife, my cast iron skillet, and my Boss wood cutting board I use every single day.
You need to give a lesson on how to properly care for a cast iron, because I think I do a good job. I've watched so many tutorials and I love my cast iron, but I could still use some tips on like the best way to care for it.
Yeah, I will include that. What if you guys don't know what she's talking about, I just started a new section on my Substack, on my It's Mercedes Substack, and it's called In the Kitchen. And it is for paying subscribers only, but this isn't, it's not your typical, here's a recipe. It is, here's a recipe, but also why you are browning the meat, why you're browning the butter, why is it that your potatoes are soggy, how they don't end up soggy in the oven, like all of these things about understanding why you're doing things when you cook and how to take care of things in your kitchen is what I'm writing about. Sometimes they have a video, sometimes they have step-by-steps, a lot of information. So if you want to know a little bit more about your kitchen, it's not just like step-by-step, but more this is why, I would suggest checking out that section. I did my first post last Sunday.
It was about yogurt.
Yes, because it's one of my favorite things to do. And it's thick yogurt. What's your favorite tool?
All right, I'm going to be really, really boring. I really like my garlic press. I know.
Oh, my
gosh. I know. People, look, and I often will.
Is it because you're lazy?
Yes. I will often mince my own garlic, and it is superior, okay? I use fresh garlic. I don't use garlic. I use fresh garlic, and I love it. I, at any given moment, have at least 50% of my children yelling or telling me how hungry they are, and so any hack, I'm just like, let's do it. I'll throw 3 pieces of garlic in there and I'm jamming it and I'm trying to get all the garlic out and I'm getting the spoon in there. So really, honestly, it takes more time to do it that way.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah, it totally does. But it's a hack because I'm lazy. And then
you have to clean the thing. So I know. I can't believe you are pushing. You're breaking the membrane, which makes it quicker to burn.
It's horrible, but I just don't even care. I'm judging. And I think that's probably the only other, I have so much fun stuff in my, I have a very, very nice rice cooker because my mother-in-law is Chinese and she's, what is this plastic abomination when I had a rice cooker when we first got married? So I have a big fatty bodaddy and it is top of the line. It's wonderful. And I love
it's funny though, because we eat a lot, being Puerto Rican, we eat a lot of rice.
Do you make it in a
stock? I make it in my pan. Yeah. I make it in a caldero, which is a specific pan.
Like, I've made white rice that way. We don't eat a lot of different varieties of rice. Whenever we're doing, like, Asian food, we'll do white rice or a couple meat dishes we have. We like it. So, if I was doing specialty rices, like other types, I probably would do it differently. But you throw that white rice in there.
It is easy, but
it's so easy.
We do a lot of rice dishes that have other liquids and ingredients mixed in. And I would find that in the rice cooker, like I just could not get it right. It's literally what I've been doing since I can remember. And it's specific pot. If anybody here is Latino or Puerto Rican or anything, you know what a caldero is, which is this big aluminum. I have 5 different sizes. Okay.
No, I just have 1 rice cooker.
I got the big daddy for Christmas and stuff like that. Yes. I have a giant one that I use for.
You know what? Also do a tutorial on your thing about refried beans.
I'm not Mexican. I'm Puerto Rican. I don't do refried. Refried beans.
I was like being low key racist right there.
Just a little bit. I'm actually offended. That's it. You are officially canceled.
Whatever. People have been telling me I'm racist forever. You can't hurt me. No, but I just thought, so you major in the black beans sector, right?
No, that's Cuban.
Oh my God. What kind of beans do you make?
Do like a pink bean in a sauce. So it's a tiny pink bean, tomato sauce with like potatoes and things. Why are you making that face?
I want to refry beans. I want to have the beans.
I can do that because I am a chef. It's just not culturally, I have no cultural association to refried beans, just like I have no cultural association to hot sauce, unlike what most people will think.
You don't?
No.
Okay, I'm in
That's it. Form. I can't talk to you anymore. We can no longer be friends. You know nothing about me.
You need to do a tutorial on all things beans because I can make a really good, like, I think my refried beans are good. I just crave them all the time. I crave good Mexican food all the time because we used to have amazing Mexican food before we moved to Virginia. And now it's like, people go to that great Mexican food restaurant. We show up. We're like, this is not Mexican food.
We actually have good stuff here. Because I lived in Texas and I'm actually really surprised. There's a little place down at the bottom of like where we live.
Yeah.
And it's a little drive-through hole in the wall. And she makes some legit food.
Texas. Yes. Oh, I love Mexican breakfast. Are you kidding me? Some chilaquiles. I want some right now. I'm just going to go have cheese toast.
Okay. Speaking of which, we have gone over on our time, which is one of the things which, by the way, today is what? Today is Thursday. Oh my gosh. So yesterday was our deadline. I got to pull the winner of our survey. So thank you to everyone who participated in our survey. I will be having the winner out to you guys. I should have had it today so I could just announce it on the podcast, but drop that ball. I'll be emailing you guys at the end of today, and I'll be posting it on our Substack, announcing it to everyone. Also, there'll be a nice little post there introducing everybody to our audience, which one of the requests was, cut down your time.
Sorry. You know, you want to hear about our favorite kitchen tool.
So we're working on it. Okay, so that's it. That's all we have for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button, leave us a 5-star rating, leave us a review, and share it with a friend because the algorithms hate us and it really helps us grow. So do that. Link for merch in the show notes. And that's it. That's all we have for today's episode. We will see you again next week on Tuesday for another episode of Rivera and Reeves. In the meantime, here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay, bye.